Hey everyone, thank you so much for joining the Behind Company Lines podcast. Today we have Nick Durkin, the field CTO of Harness.io, a continuous delivery as a service platform designed to make deployment easy, safe, and repeatable for everyone in engineering and DevOps organizations. Nick, thank you so much for joining the show. As we chatted before, I'm so interested in your background in particular because a lot of when we're building companies, when we're building products, it's always nice to get under the hood of what are the mechanics behind it from an engineering side. And also from a structural side and how you maintain the flow of building, how you reiterate on products, a dispersed team and have objectives and goals and people who you want creative. So many things that I want to ask, but I guess my first question is, I was looking at your background. You went from engineer and started managing teams, then started investing and then jumped back into working on a project. What about Harness made you jump back into really getting your hands dirty and starting to build something complex and honestly just revolutionary from what it's doing in terms of a technology and accessibility standpoint?
Well, awesome. Genuinely, thank you for having me on. It was interesting. So Jyothi, our CEO, approached me and he had just sold AppDynamics to Cisco. And he was actually wanting to solve a problem that was near and dear to my heart. And I said to myself that I wanted to be in a company that was doing artificial intelligence, was doing ML, but not just any type of AI and ML. I wanted it to be removing the worst part of people's jobs.
Yeah.
So I don't want to be taking away the best part of their jobs, right? I want to be able to do something that's actually removing the worst part. And so we started talking about this massive problem that we had in software delivery that build from code to artifact was somewhat of a solved problem. But artifact to customer became a huge challenge and every company was doing it differently. And every company had massive processes and war rooms and situations and it just took a massive amount of time. And this was a problem that every single customer had. And so it was one that was finally ripe for the taking because we had picked so many patterns and we'd kind of come down to a very subset of different clouds and different technologies that we're using. And now it was the time was right. And this is why I think it was a massive passion because this was a pain that every company's dealing with, every engineer is dealing with. No one wants to sit and babysit deployments. No one wants to waste the time doing all those menial tasks that genuinely don't add value to the business. And so if we could make any progress in that at all, right, it would be massive for the entire industry. And that's really why we got started with Harness.
Yeah. And what in particular are the problems that arise? Or is it just the time that it takes to go from artifact to customer? Or like I said, is there anything in particular that a lot of companies face when going through this transition? And what are those?
Yeah, I think every single company reaches for velocity. So we want to go fast. And what we do is we go use our CI tool that we already have. So we go grab a Jenkins or what have you, and we extend it. We use a whole bunch of open source tools. And then at some point in time, we actually start going fast. But we realize at that point, we have to govern it, right? Mm-hmm. We have regulatory reasons. We have security reasons. We have audit and compliance reasons. And now we have to actually govern this thing that we've made go so much faster than we used to. And it becomes really challenging, right? That's when it gets hard. It's not going fast. It's actually going fast in a way that makes it easy for people to do the right thing. And it makes it hard for them to do the wrong thing. And that's where it becomes really confusing. If a company can actually solve for velocity and governance, they can put appropriate guardrails around it, then traditionally we see an issue with quality because now we're deploying so fast everywhere, all over the place in the appropriate manner, but there's not enough people sitting in a NOC to know what broke what. And if a company can even solve for that, so now you can solve for velocity and governance and quality, now traditionally people are deploying all over the place, over-provisioning everywhere, leaving things up and running, and we have a huge efficiency issue. And so really, when we designed Harness, we wanted to solve the entire software delivery lifecycle, but we wanted to make sure no matter where you're at on that journey, right, whether you're trying to go fast, whether you're trying to govern it, whether you've now governed it and you have quality issues, or whether genuinely trying to bring that in for efficiency standpoint, you have, and pardon the pun, you've got a safety harness there for you.
Yeah. Good pun. And what happens, what are some effects if you don't kind of have your governance in check? And then obviously the efficacy or the efficiency issue I can see with multiple things running at the same time, it's just kind of they're constrained obviously with all technology and the speed. But in terms of governance, what are some bad outcomes that you might see if you're not creating the structure around it, or there's these guardrails as you mentioned around it that a company would encounter if they were just to try to go as fast as possible?
Sure. I think you can talk to some of the large financial institutions and they'll tell you specifically, they spend more money on fines than they do paying out dividends because they didn't actually meet the regulatory in their software delivery.
Yeah.
So that's a huge one right there. One of the ones that's interesting and one of the reasons we even built a feature flagging tool that allows you to do this in a governed pipeline fashion to enhance the software delivery lifecycle was a company called Knight Capital. They owned, what, 18% of the NASDAQ, 18% of the NASDAQ. And in one day, because of a bad feature flag, they went bankrupt. One day.
Wow.
Right? We actually at Harness, we took our largest outage, and I'll be honest about this. We took our largest outage because we flipped a feature flag right when we did a deployment. And because it wasn't audited, because it wasn't governed, because it was a database toggle that someone flipped, we went, we deployed, it went poorly. We rolled back because we're really good at it. We eat our own dog food, or I think marketing prefers me to say that we drink our own champagne. I think that's the preferred mechanism. But at the end of the day, we use all our tools, so we rolled back, no big deal.
Yeah.
Still, it was broken. And it took us hours to figure out that in tandem, we had a feature flag that was flipped, and we didn't realize it. So at that point, we said, this has to be governed across the entire software delivery lifecycle. So from the moment code's written all the way through to production, every part of this needs to be audited, needs to be governed. Give people easy paths and guardrails to make sure that it's easy for them to do the right things and hard to do the wrong things.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's so fascinating. And I'm curious in terms of your background, obviously looking through, it's very much tech forward, it's engineering, but it's also the solutions engineer component that I think is such an interesting cross between the sales motion, customer success, but also engineering, the kind of the ability to really enable customers to use technology to the best ability. What were the teachings in those previous experiences that led you to kind of focus on a type of technology like this? And where were you seeing essentially the struggles from the adoption? Because I think a lot of companies build really cool products and software, but the adoption of it and kind of harnessing all the features really is reliant on the service that companies have to onboard their customers. What were the issues you were seeing, and what in particular about solutions are engineering are you passionate about because of your experience?
Sure. I think this is one of the things that actually allows companies to be massively successful, because you can build the best technology on the planet, but if no one uses it, it doesn't matter. And so one of the things that I think we've done right is that we have been extremely customer focused, right? Almost maniacally focused on customers since day one. We hired our VP of customer success before we had a customer. And we did this because when we were building something, we decided not to be an if you build it, they will come company. We don't randomly just build things, right? And in fact, we use our own technology. We'll actually feature flag it out to our customers, and we'll go ahead and say, okay, how do you like this? Like, is this what you were looking for? And we'll garner that feedback from our largest customers. And so because we've been largely customer focused, one of the things that we want is we want to build a product that didn't need massive services. Because if you're doing software delivery and your product needs hundreds of thousands of dollars of services work, it's not really a software product. It's really just a services engagement. And so one of the things that we wanted to do is we wanted to make sure we had a team of experts that could show our customers how to easily onboard. Yeah. Give them the shortcuts, give them the cliff notes, if you will, so they didn't have to read the whole book and to be able to start easily onboarding themselves. And so that's what we've really been focused on. And that's what the team's been built on, is really empowering people to be able to use the software in the most efficient way possible, but not necessarily be the hands-on keyboard that sit at a company and get a badge, right? That's not the intention. If we're going to sell software, if we're going to build software, it needs to be something that can be usable.
Yeah.
That the teams can actually start adopting.
Yeah. And when you kind of break down and create the cliff notes, how do you view that? And like, in what perspective do you write from? Are you thinking about it from a customer standpoint? Like structurally, I'm always curious on how companies kind of derive the solutions and make them simplistic enough to communicate to clients and customers.
Sure.
Because I think that's one of the biggest challenges. You think about checklists or even in emails, you want to make the thing simplified and tight, but you don't want to take out the information that's important. Yeah. How do you kind of go through writing the procedures that will translate well to customers?
Sure. So one of the things is there's two key concepts that I like to use when dealing with any customer, and it's pain. Right. So what is actually causing pain in the business? So what is that burden that they have? What's that worst part of the job? What are the things that they're genuinely disliking? And if you can attach to pain, right, that's the first part. And then it has to be easy to consume. So great, I've got pain, but if it takes more pain to take care of that pain, it's not going to work for anybody.
Yeah.
And so it's really about actually making sure what you have, right, drives benefit. One of the things that I've always found that's interesting is if you're going to go and change the way people do business, people will actually follow you. So what I mean by that is if you go help someone at a company and truly change a culture and change the way that they're doing business, and if you give hours back to their engineers, if you give them their nights and weekends back, if you remove, like I said, the babysit of remove babysitting deployments, if you remove running tests, if you remove all of these pains, now you've got people that actually genuinely want to implement you, not even where you're at, but even where all their friends are. And so one of the biggest things is you have to have people that want to use your product, but more than that, you have to have people that want to actually talk about it.
Yeah.
And the only way you do that is to make them successful.
Yeah. You echo what a lot of founders kind of discuss on the show, which is really being, when they're building something, more customer centric and taking the feedback and really kind of being evangelists or advocates for those customers to make sure that they're ticking off, that they're checking off the boxes for not only their needs, but also their nice to haves as well, as you kind of go and reiterate through that process. Being that you have such a large team working not only with the worldwide field engineering team, but post-sales engineering and the portion of the product, how do you manage such a large team? And what, I guess by more specifically, how do you delegate the responsibilities in a way that is easy to understand and is clear to the employees that you have working for you to create this, I'm assuming, really positive team environment? How do you delegate those responsibilities?
So I think there's two ways of thinking, and one of it is management and one is leadership. And I think if you talk to anyone on my team, they'll tell you specifically, I don't tell them what to do. I hire really smart people and I try to figure out what I can get out of their way.
Yeah.
And I think it's important that we realize the reason that we want these people here at this company is because they're massively valuable and they bring assets that I don't have per se. And so that's not a downside on me, but let's go fill it. Let's go grab people that do have those expertise so that they can run, and let's empower them, give them an opportunity. One of the things that we have, we don't talk about failure, right? We go A-B test everything.
Yeah.
And just because it doesn't work doesn't mean it's a failure. I mean, it's the same concept that Elon Musk, he launches a rocket, right? It blows up and everybody's like, oh, this is awesome. We now know how to get the first 15 feet off the ground. Next time we're going to go further, right? It's not a failure. And so if you go with that mentality where it's a safe place to try new ideas and try new technologies and different processes, right? Give everybody that same opportunity. Give them that opportunity to A-B test. You look at the data. I think it creates a community where people want to do their best work and where they're forced to do their best work.
Yeah. How do you, I guess, more so, how do you set the expectation then for what is needed to be accomplished and then, but also incorporate that creativity? It seems like it's a cultural thing that you've developed, but I guess more mechanically, how is it set up? Is it check-ins during stand-ups? Is it reiterating values and mission statements? Is it going over and having one-on-ones with every team member? More so for the founders out there that are looking to build really strong cultures and teams that are high-performing. What I mean by high-performing is, I think, what you mentioned there, which is enabling people to do what they do best and getting us their way.
No, I think that's it. I think one of the things that we do really well here, everyone's accessible. Meaning if you want to have a conversation with myself, if you want to have a conversation with the CEO, with the CRO, you can get on the calendar. Every 2 weeks, we get in front of the entire company and we talk about all the progress, good, bad, or ugly. And there are some ugly ones and then there's some great ones. But the things that we're going to share and be open and honest and transparent with everything. And that way, it also encourages the company as a whole to, again, not have that fear, right? We're going to stand up in front of the entire company and talk about where we're at. And like I said, most times things are good, sometimes they aren't. But if you do that, and if you can have that visibility or that transparency, then it encourages your folks to do the same. And I think one of the things too is that understanding, we try to make everything measurable. So we go, and one of the things that I truly believe in, and this is something that's important, is you incentivize the behavior you want. If you want people to only work on specific projects or specific modules, or if you want them to do specific tasks with specific types of businesses, then that's what you incentivize. Right. Make sure that the way that we're paying people, the way that we're incentivizing people matches up to what you actually want them to achieve. It's very simple to go, why isn't that happening? You look back, you're like, well, I'm not incentivizing that. Like, we're not giving bonuses for that work. We're not thinking about that capacity. And when you do that, every decision people make, again, is driven by that incentive. And so that's one of the things that I think is also key to it. So be open, be honest, be transparent, encourage that with your teams, and then incentivize the behaviors you want.
Yeah. Do you have an example of a behavior that you incentivize?
Sure. So I think one of the things was, if you look at our solutions architects who go in kind of post-sales and actually help some folks design some architectures and lay out plans to go forward, we were originally only incentivizing them on renewals. So meaning as long as that person renews, great, you're getting paid. What was more valuable is actually, hey, we've got a lot of different products that we sell. We've got a lot of different modules that could be beneficial that we could have them looking at as well. So when we're architecting, designing it for what the possibilities could be, that wasn't happening. because we were not incentivizing that behavior. As soon as we change it, hey, guess what? We're going to do this across all the new modules as well as the renewals, now brought in conversations. And so it just simply changes the mindset for people.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's so simple, but it makes sense in kind of using the objectives and goals to, and incentivizing them to kind of create this perpetual machine that essentially creates behaviors and essentially get the outcomes that you're looking for. I guess early on with Harness, you've been working on the project for over almost, 6 years now. How do you balance thinking about hiring? How do you balance or know when, to hire people who have more like startup skills and maybe more skills that cater to a deficit that you have, individuals who have a particular skill set and are technical in certain areas. And so it's kind of maybe, I'm not sure if it's more focused on filling the gaps. And then when do you kind of transition from that to building a more larger team with a diverse amount of skill sets? When do you know when that transition is, and how are the individuals that you hire different from kind of startup or smaller teams to when you're scaling and growing to a larger team?
So I think that's an interesting question. I think I've seen it done poorly, and then I've seen it turn really well.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the things that a lot of people do is they almost make a hard cut where they go, great, we've got our startup people. They're willing to do everything. They're going to wear every hat. They're quote unquote the full stack developer throughout the gamut. And that's all we hire. And then there comes a point where we have to scale and we want to increase output, and people make an entire switch. And what I think we did really successfully here is that we have both organizations running actually at the same time.
Yeah.
So we have our SPG, our special projects group. So it's all of those people that genuinely love that early startup mentality, are willing to bend, shake. Things are coming in at rapid pace from different customers, from different pieces, and we still operate under that capacity. So we're actually still able to achieve those really quick outcomes for our largest and most important customers. On the second hand, in order to build new products and new processes and all these pieces, I have to go and staff up to make sure that we can keep a constant for that. And so we actually run it as two separate teams. And that was one of the things I think we've done successfully here, that I can look at other ones where when we kind of made that switch and then the early stage people said, you know what, this isn't for me, I'm going to go somewhere else. That I think is a huge change here. And I contribute that to one of the things Jyothi, our founder, has done as well, is that when you go and you build a successful company, people want to stay for those 4 years with their vesting stock.
Yeah.
And you'll see oftentimes after 4 years, people are like, okay, thank you for playing, on to the next, right? Diversify employment almost like you would your investments. But instead here, intelligent enough to say, hey, after you've done your 4 years, let's have a re-up program to make sure that you have an incentive again to stay and continue to build something amazing. So it's also been massive as well.
Yeah. What is that program in more specifically?
Yeah. The reality is I think a lot of founders don't look at the long-term game after 4 years. And so when they're planning their investments and they're planning their rounds, they don't actually put in extra equity to be able to hand out to people who are here for longer periods of time.
Yeah.
And so it's one of the things that I think it just, again, it goes right back to incentivize the behavior you want. You want people to stay here. You want them to continue with that goal, right? Make it their goal, right? It's a lot easier to dedicate your life to something that you're a part of than it is to dedicate yourself to someone else's dream. Make it part of their dream.
Yeah. I love that mentality. And it's such a simple philosophy. At this point in time with Harness, and obviously you've grown such a large amount in the past 6 years, and you're seeing a lot of traction, you're in the news, you're working on extremely, I think, technology that creates such an efficient, fast process for companies to create strong relationships with their customers through the enabling of the technology. Tell us a little bit about the traction. What's exciting now and that you've accomplished this year, and what's going to be exciting for the next couple of years in terms of what you're working on and how you expect to affect not only your current customer base, but also future customers that will be utilizing your product?
Sure. I think 5 years ago, we wanted to solve continuous delivery. So we wanted to solve from artifact to customer. And that's what we were laser focused on. And what we found is that after we did that successfully for folks, they genuinely are like, man, that's amazing. Can you do that same audit, the compliance cases, the robust access control, all this thing, can you do for the whole software delivery lifecycle? And we're like, well, heck, why not? And that's where we went. And what the difference was is for the last 5 years, I felt like I had to tell people why they needed continuous delivery, why you need to fully automate your software delivery lifecycle. Mm-hmm. And this, especially here, like AWS reInvent, and even at our own conference, Unscripted, we found now for the first time, everyone knew why they needed that. In fact, everyone's switching, not just from point solutions, they want a full platform to be able to handle this for them. And those didn't exist. They didn't exist 5 years ago. And so that's what we see is truly, and you'll see people talk about DevOps moving to platform engineering. And actually we see it holistically, but that's also why we made the change 3 years ago to go to a platform. We saw that ahead of time, knowing that's where the market wanted to go.
Yeah. Yeah. What are some of the biggest challenges that Harness faces today, or risks that Harness faces today?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I would have said it would have been the economy, but a lot of what we do actually gains efficiency for customers. So it's been an actual wonderful tool for us when we can go give you hard dollar savings and increase efficiency of your best engineers. What business wouldn't want to do that? In fact, that's right now what CTOs and CIOs right now are looking for.
Yeah.
And so what we thought was going to be our largest challenge actually now is one of our biggest assets.
Yeah. Yeah. If everything goes well, what's the long-term vision for Harness?
So when we started building this, Jyoti sold his last company to Cisco, sold AppDynamics to Cisco. And one of the things that we talked about is we wanted to build this to IPO and to go and to take public and have people be in New York and ring the bell. And I think that's our goal. That's my goal, right? I'm writing a book, Alpha to IPO, and that's the intention. Like go from no product with an idea and take it all the way through these motions as you grow and you reach those different stages and you have to make those changes. You have to make them a mental change of going from building a product to building a team, right? You have to go from those mental challenges of building one product to building a platform. Mm-hmm. And I think those are the things that very few companies are able to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one that we're enjoying doing quite well.
I love that. I love that. And obviously, I think what I saw is you're on your Series D, so maybe the IPO soon. I'm not sure what the timeline looks like for that. But I guess for the founders out there and people building products and teams and thinking about the evolution of what they're working on, I think a lot of companies that are maybe outsiders view funding round as milestones of achievement or milestone growth. But I think when the more I speak to founders and I learn myself is that's not necessarily the case. There's a lot of other things that delegate or contribute to why you have to shift your focus or when to shift your focus. What in particular at Harness has those moments been for you all? And how did you identify, okay, this is what we need to do at this point in time? Is it so setting certain measurements and once you hit those, you're transitioning, or it's kind of going with the feedback or what the market's kind of telling you to focus on? What in particular helps you all decide on where to grow and where to move and in what direction?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things we do quite well is it's all data driven. So one of the things is we, just like my third grader, went and learned the scientific method. We do the same thing. We hypothesize, we go test it. It's the same software delivery process, but this is how we do business. And so you go with an assumption that you'll build a point product and that might take you a year or two to get the right amount of customers to get the feedback to then be able to turn it into a platform. Some people never actually get to a platform. And so there are these defining moments that you're shooting for, but what you'll find is that customers will try to guide you in a direction. And I think I want to make it clear, it's they will try to guide you in a direction and you have to take all of that information with the understanding that comes from opinions that have been built over a very long period of time for those businesses. And if you take it with that understanding, one of the things we listen to all of our customers and we aggregate that information, but what we do is we also bring it back to them. I don't just go and build exactly what a customer says. I listen to their problems. I figure out their why. We get deeper into what they actually need. And we try to triangulate that with our customers. And I think that's what's allowed us to successfully grow and start building accordingly. We're willing to fail. If we build a product, if we build a module and it doesn't work, that's not bad on anybody. We're not getting fired for that. We're not creating a toxic culture about it. In fact, we tried it. We all had a thesis that it would work and it didn't. Okay, so we'll pivot. We'll change. We'll bring it in with a product. And when you create that culture, and this is what we talked about in the beginning, if you create that culture where that's okay, now you can do fun things.
Yeah.
You can do exciting things and you can test theories quickly and it's not failure.
Yeah.
Right? It's just knowing now more than you knew before.
I love that. What are you good at now that maybe 6 years back, even further, weren't so good at?
I think you brought it up. I trust my teams entirely. I don't tell them what to do at all. And I will tell you 5.5 years ago, I wanted everybody to be a replica of me. I want to clone myself. That's impossible. In fact, now, it's literally leveraging people's strengths.
Yeah.
I think that's the only way that you can actually grow and to meet the demands.
Yeah. I love that. I would like to ask this next question as selfish research, but also for my audience as well to get some bite-sized information or gems of resources. But whether it was early in your career or now, what books or people have influenced you the most?
Great question. So one book that I loved, there's the 5 Dysfunctions of a Team by Patrick Lencioni, as well as The Advantage by Patrick Lencioni. were two great books that helped you, again, work with larger teams and actually using people and again, building teams rather than products. Of course, the Accelerate books, and we get into those, are always fun reads. It gives you real insight. And this is where those measurements matter, right? When we're looking at our teams or we're putting measurements, right? We look at things like change failure rate. We're looking at from ticket all the way through, like what is it taking and where are those bottlenecks? And if we're constantly measuring on the right metrics, we'll constantly get better. And if we focus on the wrong metrics, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And this is a question that I recently thought about implementing. And so I'll try it with you, Nick. But if you weren't working on Harness, what else would you be working on? Is it a product? Is it a particular industry? Is it something completely different? Music? But yeah, well, if you weren't working on this, what would you be working on?
I do play bass for my kids' band, which is so much fun. And I enjoy it. They're 10 and 11, and they're actually massively talented. I'm the worst in the band, but at least give them a baseline. But I think I've devoted a lot of my life to financial services and to taking highly regulated, highly secure, highly compliant industries and helping them. And I think that's one area that I have a passion, which is why you see a lot of that governance and the compliance and auditability and Harness. But I've also always stated that I have to work for a company that's either in the AI, ML, or the automation space for moving the worst part of people's jobs. So that continues no matter what I do.
Yeah, I love that. Well, Nick, it's been such a pleasure chatting with you. And I know we're at the top of the show here, but last little bit, as I always like to give our guests a chance to give us your plugs. What's your LinkedIn? What's your Twitters? What is your website? Where can we find you? Where can, if we're a customer even, where can we find Harness and be a part of the mission and get into the technology?
Sure. And you can go see us at harness.io. We're large in the entire software delivery lifecycle, both open source and closed source. So we help operate some of the CNCF projects around, so Litmus Chaos, which is a chaos engineering project, Drone, which is the most loved open source CI tool on the planet. And then, of course, we have offerings that allow you to tie those all together in an enterprise offering. We're designed and built from the ground up as a software engineering tool for software engineers, for administrators, for security folks. And really, our entire goal is to empower each team. So I no longer want the infighting with security and compliance and infrastructure and dev. Let's empower each team to do what they need. Let security write the rules. Let the infrastructure teams define where things can be deployed. Let the DevOps team define how it gets there. And as a developer, I never want to see that software delivery platform, whether it's Harness or not, unless something goes wrong. And then all I want is the information to solve the problem. And that's the goal of Harness. And that's really what we're trying to do and change the industry. And that's what we're doing for folks. Glad to help you guys out. Again, you can use our free offerings all you want. If you'd like to look at any of these, I've got sales engineers that can help you actually get started and going as well. So please go to harness.io, take a look. I'm glad to help out.
Amazing. Well, I hope you enjoyed your time, Nick, and thank you so much for being on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us. Glad to be here and love to come back anytime to talk about any of the topics.
Awesome.